The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
Dear Media IRL is back, and we're showing up bigger, better, and louder than ever. Join us on May 4th in Austin, Texas for the ultimate live podcasting experience. Watch and learn from your favorite Dear Media hosts as they bring their insightful discussions from your headphones to the stage. Get ready to be inspired, entertained, and watch audio get a makeover. Tickets are on sale now at dearmedia.com/IRL. See you on May 4th in Austin, Texas. Before we get into the show, fun fact, this podcast was born out of a newsletter that we started way back in 2012. People really seem to like it, and we think you will too. It's a quick hit list of 10 things we've discovered recently that we love. Everything from recipes to beauty products to books to tools to truly anything that excites us. We send it every Monday. We do take some holidays off, and it's free. Sign up at athingor2hq.com. Here's the show. Welcome to A Thing or Two, a deep dive into stuff we think more people should know about. I'm Claire Mazur.
And I'm Erica Cerullo. Just share your thoughts on this episode or anything really, leave us a voicemail at 833-632-5463 or DM us on Instagram at A Thing or Two HQ.
And join our Geneva. It's our chat room.
It's our chat room.
That was smooth.
So smooth.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, a podcast we're excited about. Like, so excited about.
This is a you may also like.
Yes.
Moment.
Exactly. Exactly.
Lauren Sherman, who, if you know her from nothing else, know her because she comes up way too often on this podcast.
She's part of the cinematic universe.
For sure. An ensemble, lead ensemble cast member, I would say. Like, okay. She is a fashion reporter. She is one of the leading and last truly like traditionally trained fashion journalist reporters. A little over a year ago started a newsletter at Puck called Line Sheet, which very quickly became, I would say, an internet sensation.
Yeah, I was going to say it was like, it's a must read for fashion people. It's not just a must read for fashion people. It is a must read, period. For people who I thought did not even really care about fashion.
Same. It's so crazy how when she comes up in the context of like, oh, my friend Lauren, and then someone who does not even like exist in adjacent to fashion, they're like, oh my God, I love Line Sheet.
You're like, what do you care about the gossip at LVMH? But people do. Because she's just like so engaging.
Well, she's engaging.
And juicy. She knows how to tell a juicy story.
There's just enough outside stuff for it to be interesting to a mainstream audience. It's truly if Cindy Adams did fashion reporting. It's quite gossipy. It's very funny. It's very smart. It's a little mean in a way that only a few people can get away with.
Yeah. Because it's lovingly mean.
And she now has a podcast that is part of the Line Sheet universe, and it's called Fashion People, which
great
is a great
title.
Name.
Great name.
So it's out Tuesdays and Fridays. Tuesdays is news with another industry reporter or analyst breaking down the news and the rumor of the week. So basically, Line Sheet come to life. And then Fridays is a deep dive with an industry insider about a very specific topic. One that I think a lot of listeners will want to hear is she's doing an episode with Alyssa Zekri, who's the designer of High Sport, called Who is High Sport? Which apparently within our listenership is a divisive topic.
Divisive. So, I feel like it or hate it, you should listen.
That's right.
She's also doing one with Kate Young on how the Met Gala is different from other red carpet and celeb styling things like Oscars, campaigns, et cetera, et cetera. Which just, it does feel like, yeah, we all know that the Met Gala is like a capital T thing.
Yeah.
But like, explain to me the how and why and how it infiltrates fashion more broadly.
Yes.
Like, what are the effects?
This merchant, Elizabeth Vondergoltz, on pricing and why clothes are so expensive, which is, you know, related to the high sport topic, because that's why everyone's mad about high sport. And so I do think this is, you know, required listening.
Yeah.
Speaking of sensations.
Okay. We just consumed two, for us, majorly huge cultural events.
Wow. Yes.
And we're going to talk about both of them in the same episode. What a treat for us.
We saw Olivia Rodrigo in concert, and we went to a screening of The Idea of You.
I just needed to pause, give that a moment of silence.
I just
and we had so
Mama,
much
made
fun
it.
At both.
And that we got to do both of those things really says a lot about the way we have built lives for ourselves, the lives that we wanted. You know?
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You got us tickets for Olivia Rodrigo for my birthday.
Yes.
And it was an incredible birthday present.
And I tried so hard to keep it a secret, but then your husband wanted to buy you tickets. And I had to be like, no.
Yeah, no.
I mean, not that you wouldn't enjoy going twice. I would go twice, you know.
Oh, totally. But no. And he also recognized that he was like, oh, yeah, you and Claire should see that.
Yeah.
That's like, that will be more fun. Like, he appreciates Olivia Rodrigo as the cultural phenomenon that she is, and likes a couple songs.
Yeah.
But is not a fan like us.
I'm glad that he
understood that it made sense for us to go together, because one of the first things that happened to us when we walked into MSG was we ran into a friend and friend of the pod, photographer Jillian Laub, and she was cracking up. And she goes, I just love that you two came with each other. And I walked away from that interaction, A, delighted to have seen Jillian and her daughters, but B, like a little confused. I was like, why did she think it was so funny that we came together? Like, we do everything together. Like, of course we're here together.
It's not like a huge surprise to see us.
And then it dawned on me that she meant without children. We are not chaperones. We are here for ourselves. I did look around and notice that everybody else our age was there with a child. And everybody, there was a little bit of like a winking energy anytime you'd look at another adult woman of like, oh, you're here too. But we were not there with children.
No. And I do think you could like, you and I were watching people who were there as chaperones mm-hmm. engaging with the content. And I was just like curious to see like, do you want to be here or not want to
be
here?
Right, right.
And there was a sense that like they really wanted to be there.
Yes.
Like they were like having a great time, thrilled to be there, knew the songs, et cetera, mm-hmm. et cetera, but wouldn't necessarily have come, wouldn't have come on their own.
Yes.
Wouldn't have come on their own.
No, for sure. I'm curious if this left an impression on you. I don't think I've ever been somewhere with such a high percentage of tween girls in one place. Like, it was simply dominated by tween and teen girls.
I saw Taylor Swift Fearless tour.
I think I
saw some of these ones, like young,
yes.
like older cousins.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was deeply moved by it. The Harry Styles concert was my closest comp, but there was a lot more diversity of age and gender there.
Yeah, that would make sense.
Yeah, like there were definitely a lot of tween girls and the tween girl energy dominated, but it just the bodies in the space was such a high percentage of tween girls. It was so moving. Like that alone was enough to make me tear up.
Yeah. I mean, watching, there were like girls across the aisle from us mm-hmm. who were small 12-year-olds,
yeah.
like the same height 12-year-olds that you and I were.
Yes. Yes.
Like, mm-hmm. yeah, like like 4-foot-ish.
Yes. Three of them.
Three of them. Mm-hmm. Like just like singing their fucking little hearts out.
Yes. Filming all of it. That camera was turned to selfie mode the entire concert.
And singing about heartbreak and breakup that they have definitely not experienced.
That's right. Well, they got to practice, though. They got to get ready.
That is the thing.
Yeah.
They were really, like, practicing for this.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The beautiful thing about tween girls. So you may recall, we walked into the concert and we got waters and I was like, do you want something alcoholic? And you're like, I don't know. And I'm like, I mean, there's no line at the bar. Obviously, like, the line for every photo backdrop, the line for merch, like,
Claire,
insane.
The line for ice cream.
Yes.
Also, there was a lot of cotton candy consumption at this show in a way that I, like, I couldn't quite get behind.
But I'm like, no, I don't. It's Monday night. Like, I don't need a drink. I'm like, I can enjoy this easily. After one song, I was like, I'm going to go get a drink. Do you want one? And not because like I was miserable, just because it was like, I kind of need like I need a cocktail in this situation. Everybody in that stadium, that venue, was acting drunk and high as hell. And they were all so sober.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's the thing. That's the beauty of tween girls is they don't need any help.
No.
To dress
really
like this,
like,
to act like this.
The level of enthusiasm and the level of sobriety.
It was like, yes. It was really remarkable. And I was like, yeah, that's the thing. Like when you're that age, you don't need any of that because you just are that way.
Fucking high on hormones.
That's right.
High on hormones.
Screaming, singing, dancing, dressing in like really absurd, insane looks. And I can't imagine a more fun concert experience than doing it with a bunch of tween girls because they're so enthusiastic. They also know the words to every single song and they know every single word to every single song.
Every single word to every single song. The looks were really fascinating because I don't think I knew like exactly what to expect.
Yeah.
And I think obviously Olivia has a really specific aesthetic, but I couldn't tell how much that was going to trickle out to the audience. Obviously just a ton of Doc Martens, a ton of like Vans.
Yes.
A lot of like Doc Martens paired with like a communion dress.
Yes.
Yeah. Like that was like, mm-hmm. like take a fancy dress you have and often that was your like communion dress
the Doc
and
Martin,
pair it.
The Doc Martin or just like combat boot in general might have been the most dominant
I think that's
article.
Right.
And tights. There were so many tights.
Yeah. And like a fishnet.
A fishnet and a tight under a short, a jean short
was
a big thing.
Yeah.
A lot of silver sequins. And then the other thing was so much lilac, which is, I guess, her color or at least her color for this album. I wore this lilac sweater today in honor of us talking about Olivia Rodrigo.
I think Olivia maybe has helped you come around a little bit to purple. I don't mean royal purple. No. Of course, that is still
lilac, like, and lavender separate.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, I wore lavender to my eighth grade formal. So I think that part of me.
I too wore a lavender to my eighth grade formal. So I really understand.
So yeah. Olivia Rodrigo is also connecting with that, you know, part of me, that young woman that's still somewhere inside of
me. Also, that was the same era that Butterfly Clips were last in. Mm-hmm, and that butterflies and butterfly clips and like whatever was such a strong presence at this show.
I was rocked by the aesthetics of this show because they did, I think, such a sophisticated job combining several things. Like, one, it was speaking to tween girls now and their millennial mothers and aunts.
Yeah. Tween girls now and tween girls then.
Yes. Yeah. In a way that was just beautifully executed. And then the other thing that it did that I truly blew my mind was it took the aesthetics of the rainbow unicorn fairy
mermaid, like, hair,
mermaid hair lover era thing that has been in for like very young girls for the last 15 years and made it sophisticated and angsty.
It put black eyeliner on it.
Yeah, it was really shocking. Like, I just kept thinking about the thing that is like peak that aesthetic for me were the rainbow colored frappuccinos that Starbucks did.
Yeah.
And I was just, and that aesthetic is still in, and I know because I have a 5-year old and he loves it all too. And to see that somehow elevated to something
and
cool,
like subverted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One thing that spoke to all of this was there's a moment in the show where all of these glow in the dark stars are
like
hung from the ceiling.
Yeah.
They're lit, right? They're not glow in the dark. And then she, Olivia Rodrigo, sits on a giant crescent moon and then is sort of transported around the perimeter of the venue. It is exactly so referential to the plastic glow in the dark stars and moons that tween girls for at least 40 years now.
The dawn of time.
Yeah. I just explained to you how much I hate the phrase since time immemorium. Yeah. But since time immemorium, that we have all puttied these to our ceilings. And they were exactly
the number of suburban bedrooms still covered with these that don't have tween girls in them anymore.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And this, and it was like that aesthetic and that design reference, but then in the concert venue with Olivia Rodrigo in her little combat boots sitting on this thing, it was moving. I just, whoever the production designer of this show is, five stars, round of applause, standing ovation.
Thank you so much to JetPens for sponsoring today's episode. So the beauty of JetPens is that they just like very much understand like how crazed we all are about writing utensils and how specific our individual needs are. And they just act like that's completely normal. Just like it's a completely normal way to move through the world to really care about like the gauge of the lead in your mechanical pencil or the type of gel in your gel pen. And I just want to give you a little bit of a taste of the categories that you can dip into if you are shopping on JetPens. So this is specifically under gel pens, okay? All metal, archival, conical, erasable, fancy, glitter, Japanese, metallic, needlepoint, pastel, retractable, scented, sense, and white. These are just like nav elements on this website because they know that like you're coming to the site being like, well, of course I want a needlepoint gel pen and I only want to see needlepoint gel pens. And that to me is so special.
So deeply special. Everybody feels very seen by JetPens, every type of writing utensil enthusiast. JetPens is an online stationery store with a huge selection of fine writing supplies and unique office supplies sourced from all over the world. So you no longer have to go to Japan just for a pencil. Fast and free shipping for US customers with orders over $35. Free content and resources with expert guidance to help you discover and choose the best stationery. You know, it's so true. JetPens early to that content and commerce game. They really get it. They have 5-star customer care rating on Google customer reviews. JetPens has a special offer for our listeners, a free JetPens marker and washi tape with any $50 order. Visit www.jetpens.com/athingortwo to activate the offer. Offer ends 6/30/24. Again, that's jetpens.com/athingortwo to activate your offer for a free JetPens marker and washi tape with any $50 order. Offer ends 6/30/24.
And just like that, your favorite besties
and tastemakers,
Benito Skinner
and Mary Beth Barone,
are back.
Did you miss us?
You know they did.
Join us every Wednesday on your way to Sephora to hear our witty, ridiculous, and irreverent musings on life, the universe, existence, and of course, what we currently ride for.
You're going to absolutely live slash die for this podcast. You might even, dare we say,
ride for it.
The general production of this show was, the production value was so high, but also it didn't feel fussy or overdone
simple.
At any point. Like this was like, it was just like an exercise in restraint. Mm-hmm. Like everything just felt like as pared back as possible to achieve the effect.
Yes.
For example, when we got there, there was a projected very elegantly mm-hmm. onto the stage were these like candles that spelled out guts mm-hmm. and they were like slowly burning. And it was like, it became clear that like, oh, when the candles are out, the show will start,
yes.
which is just like, it was like a very cool effect in general. It had utility. It like helped like everybody know like when to start getting jazzed.
Yes.
One of the candles like fell over at one point and like the squeals.
Yeah.
It's just like, it all just fucking worked.
There was a lot, they made a lot of use of cameras and filming the stage and then projecting it, you know, behind the stage. And every time they did that, it felt so intentional and so perfectly done because it either looked like a music video or an album cover.
Yeah.
From the Fiona Apple, No Doubt era.
Yeah.
And the costumes too, the costumes were really simple, but extremely perfect.
Well, and the projection, it helped solve for the fact that Olivia's not like a dancer, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And like, she doesn't have to be when they can create that like visual effects. Yeah.
But she's so good at the like punk rock jumping up and down.
Oh, yeah. And she has great hair for like hair banding.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. There are just so many parts of the show where you're like, oh, this is a rock concert or mm-hmm. this is a punk show or like, this is just like, it's different. It's like a different experience than I think we ever got to have at a concert at that age. At that scale or like, you know,
for sure. I mean, there are some of her songs are really rock heavy.
Yeah.
And almost all of her songs have at least one moment of feeling really rock heavy. And all of Madison Square Garden, just being 12-year-old girls, just jumping up and down and like headbanging to this music was delightful.
It was moving.
It was very moving.
It was moving. Yeah, and it was also just like fascinating to, I think part of it was like, I was trying to be like, who was like this for mm-hmm. us? You know, then like you mentioned Fiona Apple, No Doubt, of course. And like mm-hmm. the No Doubt Coachella moment, mm-hmm. all of that. Also like Alanis and Shirley Manson and Courtney Love. A lot of these people were like the front women of bands, which was like also a kind of different.
Yeah, no, that's true.
Energy.
Well, they weren't pop stars. And I mean, her music is really smartly engineered and produced to be poppy and punky and like rock at the same time in a way that I think a lot of the ones that we had were just more pure rock. Like, they weren't pop stars. I mean, I guess Gwen, No Doubt, was pop.
Yeah. But I guess the other question it like creates for me is, I'm like, right, part of why, you know, we wouldn't have ever seen these shows is we weren't allowed to go by ourselves, but like we didn't have parents that were taking us. When did parents start taking kids to concerts?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it does feel related to the fact that, like, you know, that we all talk about how, like, 40 now looks so different from 40 when our parents. I mean,
And, like, millennials value experiences.
Right.
Was it that there started to become children's entertainment that was, like, beyond Raffy and it was, like, you would take kids to Wiggles concerts?
I mean,
I don't know.
Yeah. You get exposed to a lot more music now because you have an entire library at your fingertips. So, like, I may not have listened to Olivia Rodrigo as an adult if not being able to, because she's not marketed to me, right?
You were gonna like buy her CD and the CD would have been like in your kid's room.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a really good question.
Maybe someone can call in and answer for us because I need answers but don't have even.
There has to be an answer.
The tip of one. We need to talk about the merch.
The merch was good. Of course the merch was good. Everybody now has to have good merch. You know when that started?
When?
Justin Bieber's Purpose Tour. Remember?
I just like that you were like, I have not only an artist, but an answer.
Is when it started.
And why?
I don't know if it was
Carla Welsh?
That probably was. I think it was also one of the first tours that was heavily Instagrammed, probably. I just remember that merch was really big. And I couldn't tell you why. But I think it was just,
what
probably better designed. I could barely remember. I remember a lot of long sleeve tees. I think it was.
Were they in that like really big boxy? Was it like, were they styled in the way that Justin was wearing?
Yes,
at that
it was big. Yeah. And but it was also, it was like vaguely Christian because I think that album was vaguely purpose. Christian. Yeah. And so it had maybe sort of like gothic vibes to it. I don't actually remember it that well. I just remember that it was became a status item. People really cared about it. People were writing about it.
Okay. Okay.
I don't know. That's my guess.
I appreciate this.
Yeah,
I like that you were like, you know what? I have an answer.
Well, and you know, concert merch is important now, and Olivia really rose to the occasion.
We waited in the merch line, which was the longest line.
It was very
at the
long.
Venue.
Yeah. There were people signing, registering girls to vote in the line, which was very cute.
Very cute. We got t-shirts.
We got t-shirts.
You got a poster.
I got a poster. And when I said the poster I wanted, the guy came back with the wrong one. And I was like, no, that other one. He goes, oh, nobody wants that one. And listeners, can I tell you, it was far and away the best designed one. Like, it was, well, it's a very good design.
Why on earth do you think
nobody wanted it? No, I know. But yeah, I was like, obviously. But I was like, oh no, I'm taking this straight to Framebridge.
Yeah.
Like, this is a very good looking poster. Yeah, it's, you mentioned that it has like kind of zine vibes or a lot of hand-drawn vibes. There was-
And like cut out kind of collaging.
Yeah.
Like, it all was made to feel a little bit more hand done in a way that obviously it was not, but it worked.
There
it
was
really worked.
A recurring motif that you may have seen if you pay attention to Olivia Rodrigo of her vomiting star confetti into, well,
a toilet bowl.
Into a toilet bowl or just like into anywhere that is funny and cute and yeah.
Yeah.
Enjoyable.
No, it's really, really fun. Really fun. Really fun.
I teared up a bunch of times during this concert, but there's a moment in the show where she's queuing up Teenage Dream and she's doing her little chat with the audience and she's like, I wrote this song when I was 19 and I was feeling a type of way. She's like, you know, I'm 21 and I feel like I know myself so well now. And I
laughed.
I just couldn't. I
laughed.
I felt so old in a way that felt good, where I was like, I'm so glad that I have the perspective to know that a 21-year-old is an infant.
I'm so glad you think that you know yourself at 21 and that I know you don't.
Yes. So I'm LOLing and like, I guess, feeling a little smug about it. And then she transitions into, if there's one thing I wish I could tell my 19-year-old self, it's that getting older is fucking amazing. And reader, instant tears.
Just mood shifted. It was a vibe shift.
And then plays footage of herself as a child in the background while she's playing this song. And I just... Getting older is fucking amazing. And I loved her for sending that message.
Yeah.
I will say that I didn't relate the tween inside of me didn't relate to that so much because I was always so excited to be older. I think we've talked about this. I always wanted to be 30. So I was like, bitch, yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I know that 19 is, you're only going up from there.
Yeah, really. For sure.
But I guess, you know, I think a lot of young women in the audience needed to hear that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and just not that, like, of course you're going to get older and of course different things are going to change, but it's going to be great.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and I think for her, because she was a child star, she's like, are people going to care when I'm older? You know, like,
I expire at
right,
a certain point.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Anyway, loved it. Go if you can. It was great.
It was so moving
and inspiring.
It was so great.
And I'm just
she's so great.
I'm glad she exists.
Yeah.
Thank you so much to Olive and June for sponsoring today's episode. I'm going to make a bold statement. I think that Olive and June's press on nails are like culture shifting. Everybody has the most perfectly beautiful, just the right length oval nails right now. And it's that thing where I'm like, I see it so much. It always looks so good. I think 90% of them are Olive and June press-ons, and it's shifted my standards for what a nail should be in this moment.
Wow. But it's also added ease.
Totally. And it was so funny. I had a friend coming to stay with me the other weekend and I was FaceTiming with her and she was like, I'm so excited to see you because I chose my nails, especially for Cam. And I was like, what do you mean you chose your nails, especially for Cam? She flashes her beautiful Olive and June press-ons that she had picked because they felt very Taylor Swift to her. And she was like, this is what I'm doing. I'm just, you know, shifting my nails for the occasion at every moment.
There are press-ons, there's the at-home manicure system, which I'm obsessed with, and the pedicure system. And the manicure system is everything you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. Olive & June's salon-grade tools are designed just for DIY, so you can customize your box with your choice of 6 polishes. Olive & June polish doesn't chip and lasts 7 days or more, which breaks down to just $2 a manicure. As Claire mentioned, Olive & June's press-ons look so real, they last so long, and they have so many sizes, so you can find a perfect fit, and then you can just like reorder those things all the time. They are non-damaging and better than gel. Get a mani in less than 10 minutes. And the press-ons are only $10 a set for easy removal. You can legitimately remove them with warm water and you can change them out as much as you want or keep them on for weeks. You can paint them, take the polish off, add a new one, all the things. Visit oliveandjune.com/athingortwo for 20% off your first mani system. That's oliveandjune.com/athingortwo for 20% off your first mani system. That's oliveandjune.com/athingortwo for 20% off your first mani system.
Okay. The idea of You movie.
Friends.
Okay.
It's coming out. Wait. I need to know.
May 2nd, right?
It's coming out May 2nd. So it's coming out this week.
Right.
It has not come out yet. Sneak peek.
Sneak peek. We definitely bullied our way into a screening. But like gracefully.
We are tremendous supporters of this content.
As background, we read this book in 2020. We've talked way too much about it since then. They announced
if Lauren Sherman is in the cinematic universe of this podcast, yes. The idea of You is also.
They announced the movie version a couple of years ago, and when they announced it, there had been some changes that really had the fans of the book up in arms, and the fans of the book are legion. They were going to change the name of the main character. They changed some other things. I think they since retreated and decided to land sort of somewhere in the middle.
There have been different writers and producers and directors in the mix over time from then to now. And so I would say that like some of the things we were concerned about were preserved.
Yeah, for sure.
I think, is it fair to say that our overall review was, it was so fun.
Yeah, it was really fun. It really was. And I think it's so hard to feel impartial because we care about the book so much. And I think if I hadn't seen the book, I genuinely think I would have been like, I love this movie. Everybody needs to see this movie.
Yeah, totally. Totally. But I think there's also like, we were having a conversation with someone about this movie and like anticipating seeing it a few weeks ago. And we were like, oh, the adaptation, they're going to they're going to change all these things and it's not going to be as good. And she was like, oh, no. I'm a Harry Potter child. Like, I grew up knowing that the adaptation was like always going to be not true to the source material. And like, that is just like something you have to bear. And you still have to just like love and embrace the movie despite all of those things, which felt like a nice lesson.
Yeah. And I was listening to a podcast with Yulene Kwang, who's a romance author who has her new novel out.
Her debut.
Her debut novel out. But previous to this, she's been working on the adaptations of Emily Henry's novels. And she was talking about how she's such a fan that when she first started screenwriting and doing adaptations, she really thought that you had to be true to it. And she's actually come around now where she's like, no, your only objective is to make a good movie that's like inspired by the book.
Yeah.
But like, it can't be about being true to it, which fine. I don't know that I'm quite there yet.
Yeah.
I do think
because there are so many things that you see that like this, and this is like bad and weird framing, and I'm sorry, but that sometimes you like watch an adaptation and you're like, it felt a little bit more like fan fiction of the like original material than it did like an adaptation.
Right. Well, now we have this weird critique that often, not even like weird critique, but a frequent critique that gets lodged at books, which is that they feel like they were written to be adapted for the screen.
Yeah.
And that is happening to some extent.
Whatever. But there's a lot of there. Yeah. Anyway, I laughed during this movie more than I thought I was
going to.
It was just like certain things were changed.
Yeah.
Selene mostly.
Yeah.
And like Selene's kind of like place in the world changed. She just like felt like a different person. You know, she was made to be more relatable and like a little bit more of like an everywoman in as much as Anne Hathaway can really be that.
So here's what I think. And I actually think that this was like a fundamental shift for me that. In the book, Selene is so aspirational.
Yeah.
In ways that she's self-possessed, confident, professionally successful. Like all of these things that she's still successful in this context of the movie, but it turns her into a groupie in a way that I think they kind of had to do honestly, just to like condense the plot.
I think that's right. I think that's right. I think the hard thing is that I suspect they felt like they needed to make her more relatable. It's just like frustrating that there can't be a person who is ambitious and driven and knows herself and makes you work for her, that can't be relatable also.
Yes. I fear this is just revealing too much of my own psychology, but part of what I found so hot about the book was that there are two really professionally successful people working at the top of their game, and their professional lives are what bring them together in a lot of ways. Like, they're both in Basel, him for his music and her for her
right
work.
Like, not emotionally together,
yes.
But like physically,
right. Yes. Sorry, yeah. Yes, yeah. And that brings them all over the world to, you know, these different sexy locations. And, you know, she, at one point in the book, she flies to the south of France to meet up with him, but she's already been like maybe in Europe or Paris or something for work. And in the movie, am I spoiling too much?
Well,
we'll just say there's a lot of groupie vibes.
There's groupie vibes, mm-hmm. And there is, tell me if you think this is fair. There's a scene of her flying in a middle seat in economy, mm-hmm. that I can't forgive.
Because at that point, I actually just wish, if they were going to go in that direction, I would have rather him just bought her the flight.
Well, yeah, for sure.
Like, yeah. That to me is less of a sacrifice than her being like, I'm going to like go on this miserable cross-country flight.
Yeah.
It sacrificed something that I really loved about the book, which is that there's so much like self-possession and an ability to be vulnerable without being a groupie.
Yeah. This said, mm-hmm. The themes of the book, I thought, were retained,
yes.
Like really elegantly. Mm-hmm. And even when some of the plot points changed significantly, it did feel like it kept those foundational ideas in mind. And for those of you who have not consumed a ton of content about, mm-hmm. this or heard us talk about it a million times, mm-hmm. the premise is a woman, like a 40-year-old art gallery owner, mm-hmm. falls in love with a like boy band member who is in the vein of a Harry Styles, mm-hmm. type. A bunch of people,
yeah.
Not Harry Styles, but like that sort of like vibe, yeah. and energy during that sort of like boy band era, who is 20.
Yes.
And so you get like themes about like women and aging and how older women are thought of and being, mm-hmm. a like mother and a parent.
For sure. The themes of like divorce and single parenting, I thought, were handled in a really confident way that,
yeah.
didn't make her feel lacking as a character or person. And the way she relates to her ex-husband and her ex-husband's new girlfriend and things like that are all, I think, handled in a way that do feel like, oh, this is like nice modeling.
I was really taken specifically with the casting of Daniel, who is the ex-husband. Mm-hmm. He's played by Reed Scott, who I know as Dan Egan on Veep. Mm-hmm. It felt like absolutely fucking inspired casting. Like, he just plays a prick so well,
yes.
in that way that you're like, oh, you can exactly imagine the situation where a person falls in love with him, mm-hmm. and exactly imagine how a person falls in hate with him.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, and so there were like multiple scenes where you were just, it like, they were gripping.
Yes,
agreed. Them co-parenting, or like you're watching the sort of like ashes of their relationship.
For sure. And just the difficulties of divorce and that like don't resolve easily in any way.
Don't like end when the relationship does.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I'll say Anne Hathaway and Nicholas Galitzine had enough chemistry.
Yeah. I thought Nicholas Galitzine made a great Haze for the most part.
Yeah,
what did you think?
Like, I would say still, you know, hashtag not my Haze, but I'm very impressed with him. And I thought he did fine. And I mean, in general, it's just like, I have the book. The book was great. The book is perfect. The movie's something else. So the
yeah.
movie standing alone, I thought Nicholas Galitzine was great.
I felt like he was a believable boy bander.
Yes. Yes. I think in general, I'm just wowed. So I've now seen him. What have I seen him in? I've seen him in Purple Hearts. I've seen him in Bottoms, Red, White, and Royal Blue, and now this. And he plays very different characters in all of these. In fact, he plays an American soldier in Purple Hearts, that like a gruff American soldier. And he is believable in all of these characters. And I'm very impressed.
This man has range.
I think he does.
I think seeing him in Bottoms is what sold me that, mm-hmm. there's a lot going on here.
Yes. Yeah. No, he's a very good actor.
I'm going to say something surprising.
Yeah.
In watching the trailer, I was like, I cannot believe how much we're talking about Coachella and like how much, mm-hmm. Coachella is going to play into this. In watching the movie, I could not believe how much I didn't care that they were talking about Coachella. I was like, yeah, it didn't bother, the Coachella of it all did not bother me.
Well, and also when it was announced that they would meet at Coachella versus in Vegas, which is, I think it's the original is in Vegas, people were really upset. And I think they were upset by the idea that a 40-year-old woman would attend Coachella. It was part of the outrage. I'm not sure.
I think that's right. And it was a lot of like, Selene would never go to Coachella.
Right, right.
Well, Selene didn't choose this.
Like, yeah, it's, and she still doesn't choose it in the book either.
Right, it's still maintained that she did not choose this. And they handled all of the Coachella stuff really well. And
yeah, that didn't, but that change didn't bother me. I thought it worked well.
Me too. It was fun.
She has a very cute relationship with her daughter in the movie, which I like. Like, she and the woman who plays her daughter have great chemistry as well. And there's also great modeling around like what that relationship looks like that I found to be aspirational for sure.
It like made having a teen daughter look really fun in a way that I'm not sure it is.
Yes.
The fashion and the aesthetics we need to talk about for a minute. Do you think that Selene is a Rent the Runway subscriber? Because the range of clothing that she wears in the film, I just don't believe that anyone has in their closet.
Yeah, I think that's right. Okay. She's definitely, she's on the monthly subscription.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Monthly unlimited.
That's right.
Okay.
It's all over the place. There's one scene where that looks to me like her fashion is described in the book, which again, book's not the movie, it's fine. But the scene where she goes to meet him in the hotel in New York.
Yeah.
She looks dressed to me the way I imagine Selene to be dressed.
I agree. It bothered me that she was in like a strappy, spiky stiletto sandal straight off a plane in that.
Well, this is my whole issue with that entire travel itinerary is it was thirsty as hell.
It was thirsty as hell.
It
was thirsty. It was thirsty. Yeah. No. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
But let's stay on this scene for 1 second because, and this is not about fashion. The first time they have sex, and honestly, the first kiss, you commented too, both really well done and feel sexier to me than we've seen of late.
Oh, like really well executed.
I mean, there's a moment where his hand goes into her skirt and you're like, we don't get that.
We don't.
That like really centers female pleasure in that way. It just, I felt good about that stuff where, again, the book is also very sexy and that felt like it translated.
Yeah, totally. After I left, I didn't think about his clothes, but you really, you
were so bad.
Yeah.
Awful. First of all, I didn't understand what story they were trying to tell. Like, what were we referencing? Like, it didn't look like One Direction. It didn't look like BTS. Well, to be fair, I don't follow BTS that closely. Maybe
it didn't look like BTS.
It was so deeply confusing to me. First of all, I have no tolerance for a man in a sleeveless shirt ever. But yeah. But the real transgression to me was this fuzzy, like, angora or mohair cardigan that had pockets, and his hands were constantly in the pockets in a really deep way.
Yeah.
It was like...
in a really deep way. No, I think the issue is that cardigans should never have pockets.
Yeah, that's certainly part of it.
I think the macro issue is that if we just stopped giving cardigans pockets, we could solve this. And then Nicholas Galitzine's character could never do it.
And then he's
because it's always going to tug and be weird. It's never, there's like never, it's never going to work. Yeah. He should have been wearing more hoodies.
Of course. He also, like, he wears a baseball hat a lot, which is fine, but it's a very structured baseball hat and it's all black.
Well, it just doesn't feel very British in the way that it's, I don't know, in the way that it's. Anyway. The aesthetics, So the aesthetics were harder for us. The like the home, it just there was a lot that felt like a sampling of all the possible things you could like own or wear in Los Angeles.
Yeah. They also we had a friend who went to a screening before us who has not read the book, and she texted us beforehand and she was like, "Guys, I'm obsessed."
Yeah.
And honestly, I think part of the reason she's obsessed, this friend, is because she is of a similar age and sort of like phase in life to Selene, and she lives in Silver Lake. And in the movie version, Selene very much lives in Silver Lake. We're getting deep Silver Lake vibes.
Selene very much lives in Silver Lake.
And I do think certain decisions that they made are, as you said, to be relatable. And I think that really worked.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
And I think, you know, women our age who live in LA, a lot of them live in Silver Lake.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Yeah, it was fun. I mean, it's like, the great news is, we're going to tell you for the 400th time right now to read this book. And the great news is you're going to be like, I don't have enough time. This movie's coming out on Thursday. You do, because you will read this book in one to two nights.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So you're just going to do that.
No, listen, I don't like to go negative. And I I have some critiques of the movie, but you will enjoy the movie. And guess what else?
It's really fun.
I will watch it again and probably again and again.
Yeah, it's really fun. If you are as engaged with this content as we so clearly are, we are hosting a trivia night.
We are. Oh, my gosh. Okay. If you live in Brooklyn or even Manhattan or Bronx, Queens, New Jersey, wherever, Connecticut.
Connecticut. Yeah.
Come to the Crown Inn on Franklin Avenue. You're going to buy a ticket. It's $15. It's an open bar and snacks. So
it's quite a deal.
It's a great deal. So go to 831stories.com. Some of you might have picked up. We're like doing some romance projects. So we're doing
this
a trivia night.
This is the soft launch.
It's on
May 1st.
Wednesday, May 1st, the night before the movie comes out. It's going to be very fun.
I've got the plan for everyone for the week.
Okay.
Tonight and tomorrow, you're reading the book.
Yes.
The first.
Yes.
You're coming to the trivia night.
And you'll win trivia because you'll
it's so
just read
fresh,
it.
Yes. Like so fresh. Yes. So just when you're reading, be like, yeah, what hotel room, what number was it?
Right.
And then on the second, you watch the movie.
That's right.
What a perfect cultural week.
I'll be right there with you. That's the show.
Oh, hi. I just finished your episode where you were talking about menstrual cups and discs, and I'd love to share a cautionary tale with you, which is I'm the mother of two children, and I was at a long time Diva Cup user. I was at the playground, and I had my baby in my carrier, and I was playing with my 4-year-old and some of her little chums, and they wanted to see how to do hopscotch, and I thought, oh, I can show them. This is fine. Hopscotch with my Diva Cup in with the baby. It took so much force to get me and the baby up in the air on one foot that I popped my Diva Cup out, pouring blood down my underwear, down my butt crack, down my legs. And I said, kid, we got to go home. Gave my child a very candid answer about why we needed to leave the playground immediately. And she was really sympathetic. She was like, let's scoot. It was a good learning opportunity, but maybe you don't engage with feats of strength while you have a menstrual cup.
This has been a production of Dear Media, and we are so grateful to the talented team over there for helping us make this podcast happen, especially our wonderful producer, Olivia Mead. You can follow us on Instagram @athingortwohq. If you have ideas for the show or want to advertise, email podcast@athingortwohq.com. Find show notes and sign up for our newsletter @athingortwohq.com. And if you love our show, you'll also want to join our Geneva. Lots of good chatter happening there.
Please note that this episode may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products and services. Individuals on the show may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to in this episode.